Anxiety. It's a low-grade fear, an edginess, a dread. It's not so much the onslaught of a storm as the continual threat that one is coming. Sunny days are just a brief interlude. You can't relax. You can't let your guard down. Storm clouds of trepidation, suspicion, and apprehension swirl all around you. You're certain the sky is falling, and it's falling disproportionately on you. Anxiety is a big heap of what-ifs, a cascading storm of uncertainties built one on top of the other. What if I don't get the bonus? What if I can't afford braces for the kids? And what if crooked teeth keep them from having friends, career, or a spouse? In everyday life, it might look a lot like the story of a couple we'll call John and Mary. They had been married for more than 30 years, and in that time, they had experienced their share of ups and downs. But life in general had been steady, as some would say, even comfortable, predictable. That is, until the day came for Katie, their youngest child, to leave the nest. Katie had been accepted to an out-of-state college. Her parents couldn't have been more proud, but the trip across country was hard on Mary. Each mile further from home brought with it another anxious worry. Would her relationship with her youngest ever be the same? They had been so close. Would she be safe? Would her new friends be kind to her? Would she remember to call, to check in regularly? Would she want to come home for visits?
No.
Each new thought brought with it a dark, ominous cloud of uncertainty. In the weeks that followed, her anxiety grew. The house was so quiet. She cooked meals for two. She missed the soccer games, the sleepovers, the hustle and bustle of family life. She missed the sweet sound of children's voices echoing through the hallways. Everything seemed so empty. A few months went by. Mary thought she might be learning to cope when suddenly the company John worked for lost an important client. John's hours were cut, and with it went the couple's dreams of helping Katie with her tuition. The stress increased for Mary. She felt she needed to go back to work to make ends meet. But it had been years since she held a job. What skills did she have that an employer would want? Where would she even begin? An endless blanket of storm clouds had gathered around their once happy home. In a cryptic message Mary received from the doctors late one Friday afternoon just made things worse. What were these findings from her last test that the nurse referred to? Why did she need to come into the office first thing Monday to discuss them with the doctor? In Mary's mind, the storm had reached hurricane proportions, and there was no safe place left for her and John to hide. They had gone from calm and quiet to perplexed and panicked. The worry was stripping away their peace, their sense of joy, their comfort. Would they ever see the light of day again? Would they escape this impending doom? Would they even survive? Perhaps you have experienced something like this in your life. One day the skies seem sunny and bright, and the next they're dark and foreboding. It's as if the air has been taken out of your lungs and you're left trying to catch your breath. You know, the word anxiety actually comes from a Latin root that means to choke or to squeeze. It takes your breath away for sure. And it also takes your sleep, your energy, your well-being. It makes you want to cry out, as King David once did, "Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me?" You know, anxiety can twist you into an emotional pretzel. It can make your eyes twitch, your blood pressure rise, and your head ache. It's a close cousin to fear, but the two are not twins. Fear sees a threat while anxiety imagines one. Fear screams, get out. Anxiety ponders, what if? Fear results in fight or flight. Anxiety creates doom and gloom. Fear is the pulse that pounds when you see a coiled rattlesnake in your yard. Anxiety is the voice that tells you, never ever walk barefooted through the grass. There might be a snake out there somewhere. The chances are you or someone you know has a serious struggle with anxiety. According to recent studies, in a given year, 17% of Americans will feel the effects of a panic attack. The United States is now the most anxious nation in the world. The land of stars and stripes has become the country of stress and strife. It's a costly achievement. Stress-related ailments now cost the country an estimated $300 billion each year in medical bills and lost productivity. Between 1997 and 2004 alone, Americans more than doubled their yearly spending on anti-anxiety medications. We've also seen an exponential increase over the years in rates of depression. But how can this be? Our cars are safer than ever. We regulate food and water and electricity. Though gangs still prowl our streets, most of us do not live under the danger of imminent attack. Yet if worry were an Olympic event, we'd win the gold medal. One would think that Christians, at least, would be exempt from anxiety, but we're not. We've been taught that the Christian life is a life of peace, and when we don't have peace, we assume the problem lies within us. We not only feel anxious, but we feel guilty about our anxiety. And the result is a downward spiral of worry, guilt. It's enough to cause a person to get anxious. It's also enough to make us wonder if Paul was out of touch with reality when he wrote in Philippians 4:6, be anxious for nothing. We might think be anxious for less would have been enough, or be anxious on Thursdays only, or be anxious, but only in seasons of severe affliction. But Paul doesn't seem to offer any leeway here. Be anxious for nothing. Nada. Zilch. Zero. Is this what he means? Well, not exactly. Paul wrote the phrase in the present active tense, which implies an ongoing state. It's the life of perpetual anxiety that Paul wants to address. The Lucano Revised Translation reads, don't let anything in life leave you perpetually in angst and breathless. The presence of anxiety is unavoidable, but the prison of anxiety is optional. It's interesting Paul chose these words because if anyone had cause to be anxious, it was he. And if anyone knew about literal prisons with literal walls that close a person in, it was Paul. Step back in time with me for a moment, about 2,000 years. Picture Paul at about 60 years old. He's been a Christian for 30 years now, and there's scarcely a seaport across the Mediterranean Sea that he doesn't know. He spread the gospel of Jesus to the Jews and Gentiles alike across the known world. But now he's confined in a Roman prison. Peer through the tiny window of the cell. There he is, bent and frail, shackled to the arm of a Roman guard. Who knows when his back last felt a bed or his mouth knew a good meal? The trouble began for him a couple of years earlier in Jerusalem when the Jewish religious leaders accused him of blasphemy. They nearly killed him and then unfairly imprisoned him. They maligned his name, violated his rights, and disrupted his plans. Fortunately for Paul, his Roman citizenship saved his neck. Entitled to a Roman hearing, he journeyed from Jerusalem to Rome. He survived a hurricane and a shipwreck on the way, only to be bitten by a snake. He survived the snake bite, only to be stranded on an island for 3 months. And when he was finally delivered to Rome, his case languished for 2 years. But at least he can take comfort in the thought of the united congregations he helped strengthen, right? Well, hardly. There's competition in Corinth, legalists swarming in Galatia. Crete is plagued by money grabbers, and Ephesus is stalked by womanizers. False preachers are accusing him of profiteering off the gospel. Even some of his own friends have turned against him. Even worse, Paul has every reason to believe his life will soon be over. The emperor Nero has learned to curry the favor of Roman citizens by killing believers, of which Paul is the best known. Nero feeds disciples to the lions for lunch, and Paul has no guarantee that the same won't happen to him. Paul knows the only thing between him and death is a nod from moody Nero. Yet, to read Paul's words in his letter to the Philippian believers, you'd think that he just arrived at a Jamaican beach hotel. I mean, just look at the words. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Paul's letter bears not one word of fear or complaint.